well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about what's going on at the DNC. Tim Walz addressing the crowd last night and proclaiming that, yes, I support the Second Amendment. I'm a hunter. I'm a better shot, he said, than most Republicans in Congress. Right. But he said that doesn't mean that, we can't stop kids from being shot in schools. And of course, what Tim Walz didn't say is that the gun control policies that he calls for really have little to do with school safety. They have everything to do with eradicating our right to keep and bear arms. You can be a gun owner. That doesn't make you a Second Amendment advocate. That doesn't even make you a Second Amendment supporter. It makes you a gun owner. You may very well know some gun owners who are all in favor of restrictions that would cripple our Second Amendment rights. I know one of them. His name is Tim Walz. He's running for Vice President of the United States. Anyway, we'll get to those comments. By the way, Democrats are going to be doubling down on gun control in the last night of the convention. We'll talk about that as well. But let's talk about this for just a second. First, economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder the central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. So, yeah, Tim Walz, I can't even say he was laying out his pro-Second Amendment credentials last night. I mean, saying I support the Second Amendment is not laying out a pro-Second Amendment agenda or even explaining what the Second Amendment means. Right. This is one of the most frustrating things as a Second Amendment advocate is to hear these politicians, and some of them are Republicans, too. But the vast majority of the folks who tried out the almost Second Amendment supporter butt line are Democrats. And inevitably, they want to focus on what comes after the comma, right? The but, not the I'm a Second Amendment supporter part. Because in truth, I don't really think they are Second Amendment supporters. What does the right to keep and bear arms mean to Tim Walz? Does it mean the ability to take to the field with a shotgun to go hunt pheasants? Presumably, yeah. Does it mean the ability to participate in marksmanship competitions? Well, that's probably a little sketchier, right? Depends on what type of firearm we're talking about here. I mean, maybe a bolt-action rifle? Maybe a lever-action rifle? Some automatic rifle? No. A handgun? Kind of iffy, right? So I just don't buy it when I hear Tim Walz say that he supports the Second Amendment. How and where? I mean, sure, back when he was a member of Congress, he was A-rated by the NRA. He was a pretty reliable vote for pro-gun legislation. Yeah, he was opposed to things like a ban on so-called assault weapons. That changed when he decided to run for governor of Minnesota. And instead of representing a rural, fairly conservative congressional district, he then had to appeal to Democrats statewide, including in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And you know, those pro-gun positions, well, they weren't going to be nearly as popular with that potential constituency, right? So Walz evolved on the issue. But again, continues to maintain that he supports the Second Amendment. I would just like to know how. And maybe if Walz or Harris ever do deign to answer questions, somebody can ask Tim Walz, what does support for the Second Amendment to you actually mean? And as for what's going to be taking place tonight at the DNC, Congressman Lucy McBath is going to be moderating a conversation with activists and gun violence survivors from across the country, including Abby Clements, who is a second grade teacher at Sandy Hook in 2012, Kimberly Rubio, whose daughter was murdered in the shootings at Uvalde in 2022. McBath said, stories matter. People's lived experience matter. She said, we're not numbers and statistics. We're real live human beings having such traumatic experiences that do not have to happen. And in that, McBath is not wrong, right? We aren't just talking about statistics. We are talking about human beings. But not everybody involved in one of these tragedies comes down in favor of more gun control. And that's part of the problem with that rhetoric, right, is that according to McBath and other gun control activists, there is really only one correct way to respond to a shooting incident. And that is, again, to embrace a gun control agenda. So if you want to look at things like school safety, if you want to look at the criminal justice system, if you want to look at mental health, if you want to look at anything other than trying to restrict people from exercising a fundamental civil right, then you're now seen as part of the problem. You know, most of us in our lives have experienced the tragic loss. I say most of us. I don't know. Maybe you have not. But I have experienced the loss of a loved one. It shouldn't have happened. And it wasn't gun violence. In my case, it was alcohol. I lost my son 2 years ago to chronic alcoholism. And it shouldn't have happened. He was one of the 100,000 plus Americans who died from alcohol-related causes that year. Another 100,000 or so Americans died from drug overdoses. We had 40,000 or so suicides that year. I call these the deaths of despair. And they are, I think, in many cases, preventable. But we're not going to prevent them by reenacting Prohibition 2, whether it's to stop the sale of alcohol or to stop the sale of firearms and ammunition. We've gone down that road in our nation's history, and it hasn't worked. We can look at Mexico for an example of, you know, highly restrictive policies regarding gun ownership and the damage that criminals continue to do, the misery that they continue to inflict south of the border. Because the average law-abiding citizen in Mexico, it's very difficult for them to legally exercise their right to keep and bear arms. Drug cartels, on the other hand, I mean, you know, they don't just have access to handguns and shotguns and rifles. They've got access to grenades. They've got access to drones. They are taking guns from the military. The bad guys not only have the ability to illegally acquire firearms, they are using those firearms to essentially establish a narco state. So you don't have to like firearms. I granted that most of our audience, I'm guessing, does. But even if you think, oh, guns are icky, I'd never want to own one. Okay, that's your choice, right? But trying to ban them, or even successfully banning them, doesn't mean that they go away. And it doesn't mean that crime drops. As a matter of fact, as we'll talk about here in just a second, crime is dropping in the United States right now, according to the FBI statistics. And Dr. John Lott would say, well, look at the crime victimization surveys and it might tell a different story. But just based on what the FBI is saying, violent crime is dropping around this country. There really haven't been any new gun control laws introduced at the federal level. Now, we've seen a couple of states that are already pretty anti-gun enact more anti-gun measures. We've seen states that are pretty pro-gun enact more pro-gun measures. And violent crime and homicides continue to drop in places like Jacksonville, Florida. We talked about this, I think it was earlier in the week, a constitutional carry state, right? Homicides down pretty dramatically in places like Houston and Dallas, another constitutional carry state. Miami, Florida, last year had the lowest number of homicides since 1947, I think it was. And again, in Florida, a constitutional carry state. So more guns doesn't equate to more crime, and more gun control laws do not equate to greater safety. But you won't be hearing that at the DNC tonight. No, no, no. A Harris Walz official pointed out that Harris supported the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act that President Joe Biden signed into law in 2022, which imposed federal penalties for the straw trafficking of firearms, enhanced background checks for people buying guns under the age of 21, and closed loopholes, quote unquote, that it allowed people who were guilty of domestic violence against non-married partners to buy firearms. Now, what the Harris Walz campaign doesn't want to talk about is the fact that as district attorney in San Francisco, Kamala Harris co-authored an amicus brief arguing that Washington, D.C.'s ban on handguns was perfectly constitutional because the Second Amendment didn't protect an individual right to keep and bear arms. Kamala Harris opposed the Bruin decision just 2 years ago. You could say, well, I mean, listen, 2008, she's evolved since then, right? I don't know that she's ever actually walked back anything that she wrote in that amicus brief in the Heller case. But after Bruin was decided just 2 years ago, Kamala Harris said that it was an affront to common sense and the Constitution. Said the Bruin decision would make the country a more dangerous place. That hasn't happened. And again, what did Bruin say? It said that licensing authorities could not deny somebody their right to carry for arbitrary and capricious reasons, that you did not have to provide a justifiable need or good cause to exercise your right to bear arms in self-defense. The state could not demand that of you. Kamala Harris disagreed. She liked the May issue system that was in place in California. That's what she would like to see, I suppose, nationwide. Even though we know that not only did that May issue system lead to many people being completely unable to exercise their right to bear arms, it actually fueled and encouraged graft and corruption in the licensing process. You know, Santa Clara County Sheriff Lori Smith resigned just ahead of a guilty verdict in a civil trial about a pay-to-play scheme in the Bay Area County. A couple of her underlings, at least one of her underlings, has been convicted in criminal court in connection to that case. Several individuals who offered bribes in exchange for concealed carry permits facing criminal charges. And during the trial of Lori Smith, it came out that if you were a VIP, right, if you were a very important person, if you were giving money to an independent, supposedly independent campaign for her reelection, if you were donating goods, perhaps, to the sheriff's department, well, not only was your application going to get considered, your application was going to get approved. If, on the other hand, you were a woman who had a domestic violence, abusive partner, and you had gotten away from them, but you were concerned for your safety, and so you wanted to apply for a concealed carry permit so that you could, again, carry a firearm in case this guy came after you, you never heard back from the sheriff's department. It's not even that you were rejected. They just stuck your application in a drawer and forgot about it. And that was perfectly legal, right? That was perfectly fine under California's May issue law. They could, again, arbitrarily pick and choose who got to exercise their right of self-defense. It may not seem like a big deal to Kamala Harris. Again, she has Secret Service protection. She had, back when she was a senator, she had the LAPD providing security even when she wasn't in Los Angeles. She would go on these, speeches in like Stockton and Fresno, and the LAPD would be there. Most of us don't have that option. We don't have a team of paid security following us around. We are our security. We are our family security. And this is the gun control side of the equation that they won't talk about at the DNC. You know, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham spoke earlier this week, didn't talk about her attempt to ban concealed carry in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County through executive fiat. Didn't talk about that at all. Didn't even mention it, as a matter of fact. Now, maybe it's because the federal courts have smacked her down, but, you know, she's still trying. After a federal judge said, no, you can't simply ban concealed carry in the entirety of the city and county, she said, well, what about parks and playgrounds? Can I do that? Judge said, maybe playgrounds, but not parks. That case is still being litigated, by the way. But again, that didn't come up. When Tim Walz spoke last night, talking about the need for common sense gun controls, he didn't talk about this incident that we discussed on yesterday's program here on Bearing Arms. These four teenagers in Minneapolis who were shot in a stolen car over the weekend. Police believe that it was juveniles who shot at them, by the way, although no arrests have been made. Two of the teens who were shot had been arrested just a couple of weeks earlier, again, behind the wheel of a stolen car. And they weren't prosecuted. The prosecutor in Hennepin County rejected charges. And then had the temerity to say, well, I mean, the police never referred these teens to our youth auto theft intervention program. I can't remember the exact name of the acronym there. And it was up to the Minneapolis police chief to say, no. We brought felony charges to your office and you rejected those felony charges. And you basically sent these kids back home to their parents. Tim Walz didn't bring that up. In fact, Tim Walz really didn't even get specific about the type of gun control policies that he wanted, right? He puffed himself up. I'm a Second Amendment supporter. I'm a hunter. I'm a marksman. You can be all of those things, but that doesn't make you a Second Amendment supporter. Because if you are trying to inhibit the ability of your fellow citizens to exercise this fundamental right, you can't be a Second Amendment supporter. You can own 100 guns. You can be a competitive shooter. You can be a hunter. You can be a firearms instructor. But that doesn't make you a Second Amendment supporter. It just, again, makes you a hunter or a gun owner or a competitive shooter or a firearms instructor. Your ownership of a firearm doesn't make you a Second Amendment supporter any more than owning a car makes you a fan of NASCAR. It's your actions that count. And Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's actions are anything but supportive of our right to keep and bear arms. Case in point, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Well, I tell you what, before we get to that, let's talk a little bit more about those FBI crime stats. The magazine American Rifleman. Now with a story, a study finds inverse relationship between violent crime and gun ownership, citing a study from the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, which, in full disclosure, I am a board member of that organization. Guy Sagi, writing at American Rifleman, the violent crime rates decrease when more law-abiding citizens own firearms, according to analysis of FBI data and firearm sales conducted by the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. New FBI data for the first quarter of 2024 shows violent crime dropped by more than 15% from the same period last year at a time in which U.S. gun ownership has continued to rise. Citizens Committee Chairman Alan Gottlieb says more guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens is probably a deterrent. Recent data shows a 6.7% increase in gun ownership between 2017 and 2023. And during that period, gun ownership among women went up 13.6%. Meanwhile, according to the FBI, a comparison of data from agencies that voluntarily submitted at least two or more common months of data for January through March of last year and this year indicates that reported violent crime decreased by 15.2%, murder dropping by 26.4%, rape decreasing by 25.7%, robbery dropping by 17.8%, aggravated assault decreasing by 12.5%, reported property crime also decreased by 15.1%. As Gottlieb says, this is a significant report. Because it literally destroys a myth that has been perpetuated for years by the gun prohibition lobby, that more guns results in more violent crime. Today, he said, 29 states have passed laws eliminating the need for permits to carry firearms for personal protection, yet crime is down. More than 21 million Americans are licensed to carry, according to the most recent available data, suggesting that they aren't a problem, but might be a part of the solution. And again, you can look at some of the most gun-controlled cities in the country right now. Oakland, California, Worcester, Massachusetts, to name just a couple of examples. Minneapolis, although I wouldn't say it's one of the most gun-controlled, it's getting there, right? We had a story earlier this week at Bearing Arms. I think I might have talked about it on the show here. A shooting in Oakland where a mom and her daughter went to confront a group of kids, basically teens, they were trying to sell marijuana vape pens there in the neighborhood to kids. The younger of the two women shot and killed by this group. She didn't present a threat to them. She was simply saying, hey, go do this somewhere else. And they shot and killed her. Her mom complained about violent crime being out of control in Oakland. Now, again, this is one of the most gun-controlled cities in the country. California law, you've basically got universal background checks, right? You got a 10-day waiting period to acquire a firearm. You can't even legally purchase ammunition in the state of California without going through a background check, nor are you allowed as a California resident to purchase ammunition out of state and bring it back into California. They've got bans on so-called assault weapons. They've got bans on so-called large-capacity magazines. They've got red flag laws. They had until very recently a gun rationing law that forbade lawful gun owners from purchasing more than one firearm in a 30-day period. I mean, you name the gun control restriction they've got on the books in California. And yet, criminals are still finding a way. But if that mom wanted to get a concealed carry license so that the next time drug dealers on her block showed up, she might be able to protect herself, good luck. Good luck. It's going to cost you hundreds of dollars. It's going to take over a dozen hours of training. And even after you submit your application, including a psychological exam and other nonsensical rationale, you're going to be twiddling your thumbs for months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years before your application is acted on. And that, by the way, is with the Bruin decision. It is so much easier in states like California or Massachusetts to illegally acquire a firearm than it is to do so legally. So I would ask if Tim Walz, and I guess Kamala Harris too, I don't know if she's even going to bother to claim to be a Second Amendment supporter tonight. I kind of doubt it, but we'll see. But if Tim Walz says, well, I support the Second Amendment, then I would ask him, do you think it should be easier to get a gun legally or illegally in this country? And if criminals don't have to go through all of the hoops and hurdles to illegally acquire a firearm, then why should lawful citizens be required to do this entire, laundry list of bureaucratic items before they can exercise a fundamental civil right? All right, now let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. And we will talk about a case out of Minneapolis, another incident that Tim Walz did not mention in his speech to the DNC on Wednesday night. Minneapolis man convicted of abducting woman sentenced to probation. Well, that'll teach him, won't it? I mean, come on. So this is from KSTP. Minneapolis man convicted of kidnapping a woman who thought he was her rideshare driver, sentenced to probation earlier this month. 27-year-old Dakarius Nathaniel Black, convicted of one count of felony kidnapping, as well as one count of fleeing a police officer in a motor vehicle after entering an Alford plea on June 25th. An Alford plea means that, he did not concede his guilt, but he admitted that the evidence against him was strong enough that he probably would have been convicted had the case gone to trial. So a few days ago, Black was sentenced to 717 days in prison, less than 2 years, right? With credit for 717 days already served. So basically, the judge said, okay, every day that you spent in a jail cell awaiting trial, we'll just count that as your actual sentence and you're free to go. Additional sentences of 1 year and 27 months were stayed for 3 years while he was placed on probation. So unless Black violates the terms of his probation, is caught, and then is sentenced to serve the entirety of his earlier sentence, which, by the way, doesn't always happen. In fact, doesn't often happen. He's free and clear. He's also supposed to pay $5,000 to the Cannon Falls Police Department as part of his sentence. We'll see if that happens. Now, this was back on August 27th, 2022. Cannon Falls police were called to a convenience store just before 11 o'clock in the morning after a clerk phoned 911 and said, hey, there's a woman crying in the bathroom who says she's been abducted. When police were on their way to the store, they found a person matching the suspect's description in a parked car. The police chief turned around to talk to the person in the car. The car then took off. A pursuit started. The chief lost track of the suspect's car, but then found it a couple minutes later. The vehicle collided with the squad car. Then the suspect vehicle then almost hit a woman who was on the side of the road, then speeding off again. Chief drove up to 124 miles an hour, but couldn't catch up to the suspect, according to the complaint at the time. The driver was eventually arrested by police in Faribault. The victim's purse and identifying cards were found inside. Victim told police that she was in Minneapolis. She had gone to a concert with her boyfriend and some other friends. But when she and her boyfriend got into an argument, she threw her phone down. She walked a couple of blocks away from the hotel that they were staying at. She then got lost. And this vehicle pulled up. She thought it was a rideshare driver that could take her back to her car in a parking lot. Instead, the man refused to let her out. Drove through several cities. The complaint states that the victim couldn't remember all of the towns that they had driven through, but said that the man repeatedly told her that he would not let her out unless she had sex with him. Eventually, the woman said she needed to use the restroom. So the man stopped at this convenience store in Cannon Falls. She asked those inside to call police. And that's what led to the arrest here of Dakarius Nathaniel Black, who, after spending 717 days in a jail cell awaiting trial, was told by the judge that he was free to go. Just, you know, don't do it again. That's the criminal justice system in Tim Walz's Minnesota. I don't know about you. It seems pretty soft sentence to me. I would imagine to the victim in this case as well. And today's Armed Citizen story from North Texas, where a man who shot at robbers, who shot first at him, said when you have to defend yourself, you do it. Now, the headline doesn't mention that, right? The headline, North Texas man who shot a robber is trying to steal a Maserati. When you have to defend yourself, you do it. In Texas, you do have the right, in some circumstances, to use deadly force to protect property. But that's not what happened here, despite the headline. This was actually a case of self-defense, not defensive property. This also happened a couple of years ago, but the armed citizen in this case is just now speaking out because the suspects in this case are finally getting their day in court. It was, again, back in 2022, Jack Hobbs and his friends were leaving a restaurant in the Dallas University Park neighborhood when a group of armed and masked men tried to carjack his friend's Maserati. Hobbs' friend saw the group coming, saw the gun in one of their hands, and threw his keys, right? Just basically, here, man, take it. Didn't matter. One of the armed robbers, a guy by the name of Lakezia Dade, allegedly fired a shot. And that is when Jack Hobbs fired back. He said, I pulled out my trusty pistol, shot three times, one of the bullets hitting Dade. He said, that's when the barrage really started. 18 bullets came our way. Destroyed three cars, maybe four cars. There were families inside the restaurant that were ducking for cover. Thankfully, nobody else was hit. Hobbs says, though, it could have been a lot worse. Absolutely, it could have been. Now, the sentence for Dade, 25 years in prison. That's a stiff sentence. That's not time served. Hobbs says that he hopes Dade learned something while he is in. His two accomplices, Kylan Owens, is still pending adjudication. Anthony Primers, another suspect in the case, pleaded guilty to aggravated robbery. He was sentenced just a couple of days ago to 12 years in prison. Jack Hobbs says, think twice before you try to engage in a carjacking like this. He said, especially in Texas, you don't know who's carrying a gun, so you better be careful. You know, it's good advice for Jack Hobbs. But it's also true that one of the reasons why we are seeing so many of these incidents, whether they're armed carjackings or simply, you know, auto burglaries, is because the vast majority of the time people are getting away with it. We talked about this, I think, on yesterday's program, right? So the clearance rate for auto theft in Minneapolis right now is less than 2%. Less than 2%. 98% of the time, somebody steals a car, they don't get arrested. They don't get charged. They don't get prosecuted. They don't go to jail. According to Fox 4 in Dallas-Fort Worth, in the Dallas area, police cleared 5% of stolen vehicle cases last year. This year, there's been slight improvement. They're up to 6% clearance rate in Dallas, Texas, when it comes to stolen vehicles. So again, more than 90% of the time that somebody steals a car, they get away with it. Crime pays. And if there are no consequences, well, you're going to see more of these types of actions. And I think Jack Hobbs is right. These carjackers and car thieves, in, particularly in Texas and other constitutional carry states, should be well aware that while the police might not catch them. They happen to pick the wrong target and come across an armed citizen. Law enforcement, frankly, is the last thing they have to be worried about. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. A police officer in Connecticut who helped to deliver a baby after a couple got a flat tire on their way to the hospital. Man, I can only imagine how terrifying that must have been for the parents there. A pregnant woman and her husband on their way to a Stanford hospital for a prenatal checkup when their car hit a pothole and got two flat tires. So they weren't in, she wasn't in active labor, it sounds like, at the time. At least she didn't think she was. But when Greenwich officer Joshua Weinstock arrived on the scene and made contact with a couple, the woman was experiencing abdominal pain. So they called 911 when the pain got worse, because at that point she suspected that, yeah, she was in labor. And then she realized, oh, these are contractions. I don't know how long it would have taken for an ambulance to get there, given that a 911 call was made, but that delivery happened pretty quick because Officer Weinstock ended up taking over, advising her to push until she delivered her son. The woman eventually gave birth to a healthy baby boy who they've named James Vincent Sanford. First responders arrived on the scene shortly thereafter, transporting the couple and their newborn to a local hospital there for post-birth treatment. Greenwich Police naming Weinstock as the officer of the month for quick thinking actions and professionalism on the job. And good for him. Right place, right time, willing and able to do the right thing, and welcoming a little baby into this messed up world of ours. So, Officer Weinstock, we thank you for your very good deed and for the couple. I hope that you and your family have a very, very long and lovely life together. Enjoy the next 18 years. They're going to go by awfully fast. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. I apologize again. This is I like to make sure that every show we've got guests here, but this week my schedule has been so freaking crazy. I haven't even had an idea when I'm going to have time to sit down and actually do the show on a daily basis. So it's been really difficult for me to schedule guests. Fingers crossed that things calm down and slow down, and we have fewer doctor's visits and hospital visits and tests to figure out what's going on with Missy, and we get a resolution and some improvement here. But I do appreciate your patience for what has been a pretty chaotic week for me. And as I said yesterday, thoughts and prayers are greatly appreciated. This has not been a great time for Missy, and I'm hopeful that she will see some improvement here very soon. But we're still waiting on that improvement. So, again, any prayers and thoughts you can send our way would be greatly appreciated. I hope you have a fantastic week. Make sure you check out BearingArms.com both on Friday and throughout the weekend. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, litigation, legislation, regulation, and, of course, the culture war attacks on our Second Amendment rights. We've got them all covered for you. And don't forget as well, if you're in the New England area Saturday, 10 a.m., get there a little bit earlier. Boston Common at the bandstand. You got the Right to 2A rally. It's going to be taking place. Also, the sort of unofficial kickoff for this referendum to undo Chapter 35, the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act. Looking for a great turnout. Should be beautiful weather up there in Boston Common. And again, if you're a gun owner, not just in Massachusetts, but New England, anywhere in New England, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, get to Boston Common if you can. Show your support for these Massachusetts gun owners. We'll see you back here on Monday for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.